Welcome to Countdown to Kindergarten. This is Barbara Hawkins, Head of Children's Services at the Fairfield Public Library. Today is Wednesday, February 27th, 2008, and we are hosting Countdown to Kindergarten, a seminar designed to help parents and preschool teachers prepare young children for success in kindergarten. Joining us today is a panel of professionals from the Fairfield Public Schools. First, with an overview of the program, we will hear from Dr. Gary Rosato, who is Director of Curriculum, Instruction, and Assessment. Next, Rebecca Miller, an elementary school social worker, will discuss children's social and emotional readiness for kindergarten. Then Susan Totillo and Nancy Miss, both kindergarten teachers in the Fairfield Public Schools, will take us through a child's typical day in kindergarten. Following this, Nancy Winstead and Jerry Ann Mitchell, two speech and language pathologists, will discuss speech and language development in young children. Marlene Cavagnulo, who is coordinator of preschool special education in the Fairfield Public Schools, will then discuss children with special needs. Finally, Franklin McLean, who is a language arts consultant, will discuss reading readiness in young children. The program will then move to the Fairfield Children's Library, where library staff members have prepared book lists and presentations on selecting library materials for children ages 3 to 6. Special thanks go to the following staff members in the Fairfield Children's Library: Cheryl DelVecchio, Cindy Haynes, Meg Lurchin, Diane Pagnosi, and Beth Sahagin. So now, without further ado, let's hear from Dr. Gary Rosato.
Thank you, Barbara, and thank you to the Fairfield Public Library for hosting this event tonight. As Barbara said, as we were emailing over the last number of weeks, I think we've hit a nerve because this is a pretty much a sold-out event, if you will, and there's a great interest in making sure that our children are ready for the kindergarten experience. Before we go any further, though, I'd like to introduce our newest member to the Fairfield Public Schools, someone who will be very involved in the kindergarten program. It's Anna Kutea Leonard over here, who is our new... Anna is our new Director of Elementary Education, a new position that we've recently created. And Anna comes to us from the State Department, but we're not going to hold that against her. But she's been a former teacher and a former elementary school principal, and she's got a great number of years, and we're looking forward to her expertise in the district. I also would like to thank the panel of our experts here, our teachers and professionals from the district, because this event really took a lot of personal time and professional time, meeting time, to put this event together. And I want to thank all of them because they very willingly said yes, they would love to come forward and present this to you because they know how important it is for kids to be ready for kindergarten. This whole idea began last summer when Barbara invited myself and Dr. Clark, our superintendent, down to the library for a tour and also out to a really lovely lunch, thank you, Barbara, where we had the opportunity to talk to all the librarians about the programs here and to talk about how we might better work together, the public school district and the resources that are here at the library, but also throughout Fairfield, because this is a community rich with wonderful resources. And as we talked, communicated here and then met with the panel, we thought that the best way to do that would be to develop a program which has been called Countdown to Kindergarten to talk really about the kinds of things that parents can do with their 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds at home as they're thinking ahead to the kindergarten experience. I can tell you, if this is your first time into the public school system, you will survive this one. As a survivor myself, my son is now 26, did very well, and I would say to you, if this is your first time through, to enjoy every single moment because the years tend to fly by very, very quickly. But it's a really exciting journey, so enjoy it. My role in the district really is to work pre-K through 12 on our curriculum, our program of studies. So I have kind of a broad range of responsibilities, but I like to say that I'm a recovering elementary school principal, but the matter is those were the years that I loved the most in my career because there is nothing like what goes on in the energy of an elementary school. And I can say that on those extra special stressful days, the first place I would go would be to the kindergarten classroom to sit down and read with a child or draw a picture or talk about their day. And that always brought the level of stress down. But I know firsthand from working in the schools and in my position, I was pre-K through 12 with curriculum, that the foundation really does begin at the kindergarten level. And that's really what the focus of tonight is about, is to help provide you with information that will, I think, enrich your child's experience as they are preparing for to come to kindergarten. Let me tell you a little bit about what tonight is not going to be about. It's not going to be about the specifics of the Fairfield Public School kindergarten program per se, because each of the other schools has a very detailed and extensive registration, orientation, visitation program, which is much more personalized at the building level, where any and all of your specific questions can be answered. And the other thing that tonight is not about is about any specific child who's coming into the district. It's really to provide you with information in sort of a global way about the great resources that are available here at the library throughout the town of Fairfield, such as at the museum, at the Audubon, or even at the beach, and how those kinds of activities can help prepare your child for kindergarten. You may have seen this article, but it was, I believe, two Sundays ago in the New York Times. It was in the magazine section. I think it was the cover story, Taking Play Seriously. Again, as a as an elementary principal, as a former principal, and even as of today, I truly believe this is a very important issue. And as I think about readiness skills coming into kindergarten, and I'm sure you'll hear that more than once tonight, the idea of play, of imaginative play, free play, pretend, playing with language, those are all pieces that are going to be critical for your children to do well in school, because that's really at the foundation of what they need to have as they come into kindergarten. Parents often have questions about readiness, and that's a very personal family kind of question and decision that needs to be grappled with. Tonight, hopefully, throughout the course of the next hour, an hour and 15 minutes, we're going to be presenting tons of information that I hope will sort of spark some ideas in your mind, maybe bring up a question or two that you want to have addressed, and that's all good. But what I would say to you most of all is to relax and take a deep breath, because I can speak to the wonderful professionals that we have in the schools who will not only work with you, but work with your child in a wonderful way as they come into the kindergarten program. We do have a pretty full night planned. We have quite a few people who have a presentation. We are going to keep the questions for the end. And after the presentation, I know that a tour will be going on in the library, which you will be going to. But I will be staying back here, and maybe there will be others as well. So if you have a specific question that you might want to ask me or want to touch base with me, I will be here after if we don't get a chance to answer your question at that time. At this time, I believe I'm going to turn it over to our first presenter, Becky Miller. Becky is our school social worker at McKinley School, and she's going to be our first presenter talking about social emotional readiness for kindergarten. Becky?
Hello. All right. Let me see if it's working.
Becky, do you want me to go through it?
Sure, if you would. Here we go. All right. I'm going to talk a little bit about how to just get your have your child be as emotionally prepared as he can be for the big day. Here are some of the things, if your child's coming out of preschool or coming from home, here's the challenges that just to keep in mind they'll be facing. We're talking about a much larger building. There are a lot more people, many children, many adults through the building, but the amount of adults in the classroom is going to be more than they have preschool. There are a lot of increased demands for independence and self-control. All of these things, sitting still, making choices, getting up and moving from room to room, moving from their classroom into the hallway, down to the gymnasium, into the library, keeping track of all of their personal things, getting them in a cubby, getting their backpacks out, getting their items out, using a bathroom alone by themselves. Even it's hard, handling a lunch tray can be one of the most overwhelming things for children the first couple days, and opening that milk cartons. I open dozens of milk cartons every day and straw wrappers. And just needing to sit still and be more structured and focus on learning. These are some of the challenges they'll be facing that may be different than they are doing right now. In general, your child going to kindergarten should be able to do the following things. And this is very general. Every child is very different. And as they're following directions and obeying rules, listening without interrupting, getting along with others, not going to be perfect. Don't expect them to be perfect. Using words to express feelings. I'm going to stress that a little bit more. We like to get them talking about feelings as much as possible. Speaking clearly, again, these are all general terms. Generally, we want adults other than their parents to be able to understand what they're saying. Using the bathroom without help, very, very key. And putting on and taking off shoes and coats with a little help. There are lots of adults around, but they won't be able to help in the same way they would in a preschool or at home. Okay, how to help your child gain some of these skills? I'm big on, let's talk about feelings. I listed some books here that are good, and you will get all this information in your packet too. You want them to begin a dialogue talking about feelings with you at the end of the day. These are books that are rich with discussing feelings. You can get them talking about their feelings now. You want them to come home at the end of the day and say, I'm mad, I'm happy, I'm sad. Those will help. Then you can help them process those feelings and they'll be much more confident going into school the next day. If your child is currently in a preschool, now might be a good time to start the discussion what are my strengths and weaknesses? You don't want to get to the end of the year, get to be May, and maybe realize maybe my child isn't quite ready or whatever. Now's a good time to begin those discussions so you can start to address concerns. If your child isn't enrolled in a preschool, you can certainly look for some structured activities. I know the library has many here, and within your community. It doesn't need to be something even that you're paying for, but just to start developing routines and learning to sit still and listen and be quiet. And becoming comfortable with separation. Play. This is the first thing we talked about when we all sat down as a panel is just we want to discuss. Child needs to be out there playing. They are learning everything from play right now. It's important you start arranging play dates. If you know someone who might be in their classroom, that's even better. Play structured games. I play Candyland about 10 times a day is my role as a social worker. I rock. I get to be King Candy all the time. Learning to sit, take turns, all those. They're just wonderful skills. And encouraging independent play. There's a lot of research that children really develop empathy because they're playing house. They're learning to put themselves in other roles. So that is just as important as all the structured play. Here are the things that they learn to take turns, cooperate, work as a group, and compromise. They learn to get along with schoolmates and learn that they need to share in order to get along and have friends. Okay, now let's talk about those are things we need to start doing now. As we're getting closer, let's say we're coming into May. In June, here's some other things you can start to do to help build the feeling of confidence. Trying new activities gradually, lots of support, lots of encouragement. You can do this. You're doing great. Buying your backpack early and have your child practice putting things and taking out. I'm going to tell you, buy a full-size backpack. I used to get up here with a little backpack because I, as a mom, was worried about backs. And my kindergarten team was like, what are you doing to me? Well, they can't get their... They have a full-size folder to get in and out and lunch bags, so it does need to be a full-size backpack so they can fit a folder and lunch bag. Buy your lunch box and lunch bag early. Have picnics. Have them practice opening that milk box. Read books about starting school, and I know we're going to have lots of books to show you tonight about starting school. Stay positive. Let them know you can do this. You're going to be fine. And on that, talk to them about how they feel. Let them know it's okay to be nervous. It's okay to be scared. It's okay to be frightened, but you're going to do it. I really encourage them using the toilet alone and practice hand washing. And there will be, as Dr. Rosato said, there will be orientations and individual registrations where you get a lot of one-on-one time with us. And that would be, that would really help you all feel very comfortable. Okay, we've rolled on. It's almost there. Now it's time to really want to start to establish routines. Routines may help your child feel safe. That's what they want. They want structure. They want routines. The more routinized it can be, the safer and more secure they're going to feel about the whole process. So a week before, start waking your child at the time of the day he or she will be rising on the school mornings. Very important. You don't want to impose a wake-up call the first day, unless you're crazy. Check out the bus stop or practice walking to school, whatever you're going to do. That bus is nerve-wracking. I was one of those drive-behind-the-bus moms, so go there now. Begin your daycare babysitting arrangements a week before. It would be so hard for your child to be dealing with both of those issues the same on the same day if they have to. Let them become comfortable with that setting, and then that could be a more secure thing that happens after school. Practice laying out clothes the night before. Give two choices. Don't fight the fight. Just have it out there. Decide in one place in your home to keep the backpack so they can feel organized. Again, that'll help you feel organized too and make everybody a little more sane. Establish your bedtime and begin to implement it 2 weeks prior to the beginning of school. Really important. And I always give my little spiel about 11 hours to sleep is four-year-old, so and I strongly believe in it. So yes, 7 p.m. might be bedtime. So begin practicing it the week before. Letting go. Yeah, it's harder than you think. There are definitely more tears on mom and dad's eyes than the kids. I have no doubt about it. But it's absolutely necessary for them to get there. When they come home and they're just bursting through the door to tell you about their day, believe me, you're going to be so thrilled and pleased. Let go quickly. We're all at the door ready to remove children from mom's arms, screaming, no matter what, we'll take them that way. It's better to let go and go. The quicker you go, the better for them, really. Put on your best face. The more comfortable that your child feels that you are, the better they're going to feel about it as well. And she'll be ready. Thank you.
Okay, next we have a typical day in kindergarten with Susan Totillo and Nancy Miss.
And Susan and I can be kind of long-winded, so we are going to try to stick to our script, so don't mind if we do that. Also, we have two handouts, actually back-to-back in your packet. They'll be in green about how to help your child prepare for kindergarten and some good tips on reading. And we'll start now with a day in the life of kindergarten. You all set?
Yep.
Also, we're going to give you some hints as we go through things that you can do now that will be helpful to your child at the same time. So, is that better? Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Okay, so the first day, your children are arriving to school by bus, or maybe you're dropping them off. Maybe they're coming as a walker, or whatever. Make your separation as quick and easy as possible. I know it's hard, but it's very important to do that for your child's sake, too. Walking to the room in the beginning, someone will probably meet your child at the door or at the bus and take them down. After that, children are expected to come down on their own. In the beginning, they'll be coming down with a fourth grader, fifth grader, or a staff member. But after a couple of weeks, they're comfortable walking to the room on their own, and they feel very good about that. Most children have a cubby or a locker, a place to keep their things. They'll be learning how to empty their backpacks and putting things away in their cubbies, giving notes to the teacher. This is where they first learn organizational skills, and you can help by having them practice zipping, buttoning jackets, putting things away at home, reminding them of where you're putting the note in the backpack so they can hand that in when they get to school. Nothing worse than at the end of the day, the child hands you a note and says, oh, I'm supposed to be going somewhere else after school. We usually start with morning activities, a calendar. Usually the teachers model the routine for a couple of children to come up and lead the group. They can call on their classmates to answer questions about the day and such. The morning message, we get together and we talk about what's going to happen during the day, give them a little hint. Sometimes we'll write a message together. And that's a big part of our morning, to have that discussion to start us off right. And now we're going to go into reading, what we do in kindergarten in the reading program. Kindergarten begins formal instruction to print. We focus on presenting a sense of story, book handling skills, noticing patterns in words, reading familiar texts. And in Fairfield, we're using a reading workshop model. So the teacher models a lesson with the whole group. A lesson might be how to hold the book, how to turn the pages, how to tell a story through the pictures, how to look at the first letter to figure out a word. We're not expecting the children to read, but we're giving them all the book's handling skills and reading pre-readiness skills. Then they go into independent reading with books that they've chosen from the classroom library. And they might sit and share a book with a partner. This is about 15, 20 minutes a day where they would be doing this. We all have a classroom library, and children get to shop for books in the library. We also have school libraries, and we highly encourage you to come here. This is a great resource, instill a love for reading with your children. Have them get a library card if they don't already, and start a weekly routine of borrowing and caring for books. And we suggest books with predictable and repetitive phrases, such as brown bear, what do you see? Also, Goodnight Moon, books with illustrations that match the text. And I know our librarians will have lots more suggestions for you as well. Snack is a very important part of the day. We encourage healthy snacks, and the children often come up with their own list of healthy snacks. And what you can do at home, because mealtime is important for facilitating social skills, you can help have conversations at the table, discuss the food. My crackers run like a circle. What shape is your sandwich? Talk about activities you did together. Encourage them to socialize at the table. And have your child help set the table, clear the table. All these things help build independence. Writing workshop in kindergarten begins as drawing and telling stories about a drawing. Children progress through a series of stages. Scribble writing in random letters or just strings of letters. Labeling pictures with beginning sounds. What we call phonetic or inventive spelling, which is sounding out a word. If you're writing dog, they might have DG, and that's the word. And then reading the work to peers. And I say that in quotation marks. Pictures are very important. We're encouraging them to add details to a picture and to tell a story about their picture. And that is how writing really begins. And then they get to share stories with a partner after drawing their pictures. Sometimes we have them come up and share with the group. Most of us have a little chair. They can come and sit and talk about their picture. And you can do this at home. Have them draw a picture about something they like to do. Ask them to tell you a story about the picture. Handwriting. Handwriting with the handwriting that we do in kindergarten here. And when we introduce a letter, children practice forming it with wooden letters on boards. Then they practice writing on little slate chalkboards, and they love it. It's the coolest thing. It's like going back to the 1800s where kids had their own little chalkboard. And then they write in workbooks. And again, it's just keep practicing those fine motor skills. Recess. Every day children have recess outdoors unless the weather prohibits it. It's a wonderful time for practicing social skills, taking turns, solving problems, conflict resolution. Climbing and swinging help develop gross motor skills. So it's a great time for them to get out there and socialize and build all these motor skills up. And, you know, if they're at home, encourage them to be outside every day if you can, a couple times a day, 30 minutes a day, whatever. They need to be outside running around, build up those gross motor skills. And Susan's going to go into lunch.
Such an important time of day. It doesn't change. So I have a cafeteria. They can bring a lunch from home, order from the school menu, order milk. It's a big step going to the cafeteria. As Becky mentioned, they have to learn how to carry that tray. So the first couple of weeks of school, we encourage the kindergartners to bring their lunch from home, let them get adjusted to the classroom routines, and even the routine of just going and finding the table they're supposed to sit at in the cafeteria. And then after that, we have an opportunity to practice going through the line, speaking to the lunch staff and ordering their lunch, and saying their first and last name, because they have an electronic account in all the schools and they have to be able to do that. So that's a good thing to practice at home, having your child be able to say their name. And now we move into our math curriculum. As you can see here, we have a whole group graphing lesson, and the children are sorting and graphing by color. And here we have just a word about math. Math is very hands-on in kindergarten. It's not 1 is 2, 2 plus 1 is 3. It's more about conceptual learning and focusing on the concepts. And we do that through hands-on math manipulatives. Here you see the children using a variety of materials to sort, make patterns, to count, to measure. They're using pattern blocks, wooden cubes, Unifix cubes. And, you know, this is something, again, that you could start at home. This is a helpful hint. I mean, you can have your child help sort the laundry, you know, match the pairs of socks and count up how many pairs of socks there are, count how many T-shirts there are. You know, another great thing that you can do to foster independence at home and sorting is to have toy bins for your children that are labeled with pictures and the words, such as the Lego bin, the puzzle bin. And this way your child is really practicing a mathematical skill, because when they're done playing, they put the toys away in the bins and they're really sorting the toys. And it's a great way to help them clean up too, have them help you clean up. Science curriculum this year, very hands-on. We do a lot of fun experiments and focus on making predictions like scientists do. Here we see children doing a sinking and floating experiment, very classic lesson of science in kindergarten. Our social studies really focuses on children connecting to the community, and a lot of this is taught through the field trips that we take. The field trips also will help reinforce and enrich both our science and our social studies curriculum. And here's where the library is extremely helpful during the preschool years. They have a wonderful resource here. You can obtain passes for the Beardsley Zoo, the Norwalk Maritime Center, and Stepping Stones Museum. We would highly recommend looking into taking your child to these places and, you know, having it be a special outing that they can look forward to. The Connecticut Audubon is also a wonderful resource. They have classes at the Birdcraft Museum location and also on the Burr Street location. And them also along. It's a great way to get your child in a routine and working with other children. It's great. During the kindergarten day, the children will enjoy different specials. Here's physical education, music, art, going to our school library to check out books. And then we have center time. Center time is that important time for play, which we've spoken of tonight. It's a time for the children to have independent practice for turn-taking, sharing, and problem-solving. It's also an opportunity to reinforce some literacy and math skills. Here you see children picking up letter beads with tweezers, using magnetic letters, sorting farm animals. Here they have an opportunity also to practice fine motor skills such as cutting, drawing, gluing, modeling clay, and role-playing in dramatic play. Here we have a farm stand that they're playing in. It's very fun. You can foster home in the preschool years. We have a handout that will be in that packet that's green that will suggest some activities. Also, don't throw away your stubby crayons. Have your child peel the paper off, break them in half, keep them small, use golf pencils. It helps them use pinching fingers, as we call it, to properly develop their grasp. And that's very important. And then dismissal. It's been a long day. So what can you do to help at home to prepare your child? As Becky mentioned, please buy a full-size backpack. That would be the one on the right. these are all the things that will have to go into a backpack on an average day. As you can see, even snow boots, because as we said, we go out in all kinds of weather. And please buy shoes that your child can put on independently. Imagine having 20 kindergarten students all with tie shoes and they don't know how to tie them. We wouldn't get to a lot of teaching that day. Just, again, some other suggestions, and these might overlap with some things Becky said. You know, get a calendar for your child. Children are very visual, and this would be very key 2 weeks before school begins. Have your child cross off each day with a marker as he or she counts down to the big day, the first day of school, and have, like, a big shiny sticker slapped on that first day of school. And you can use colorful stickers to mark you know, different things, their birthday, different things that are even going on at home and things they can expect at school. More helpful hints, when school begins, plan on providing downtime after the school day. Children need downtime just like we grown-ups do. They might need to run outside for 20 or 30 minutes. They might need to just veg out with a book or a little TV. Keep the TV to a minimum, though. You know, avoid thinking that you have to overload your child with after-school activities. Again, coming to school is a big adjustment, and it's going to take probably a good month, 2 weeks or 3 weeks for them to really start getting the hang of the routine. So that's important. Establish consistent routines before and after school. I think Becky spoke to that. Also, you know, little jobs that your child can do at home, setting the table, making their bed, it makes them feel good. And focus on the process, not the product. That will just help them feel really good about themselves. And cuddle up and read daily. This is a time when your child will probably open up about their school day. Sometimes when they're coming off the bus, you know, you ask them, so how was school today? What'd you do? Nothing. Or I don't remember. But when they start to relax and they have that time with you, that's when they might talk about their day. So, and is that it? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nancy Winstead, and I'm an elementary school speech pathologist, and this is Jerry Ann Mitchell. She's at the preschool, and we're going to just do a brief presentation on speech and language development. You have in your packet that you'll see, there was a yellow sheet that is a checklist of developmental milestones, and we were hoping that this might be helpful to you to find out where your children should be at as they come into preschool and kindergarten as well too. And it begins at birth to 3 months. So you're going to be going back in time, but we're hoping that this could be helpful in terms of some red flags if you have any concerns. The milestones that are included are what are expected in normal children. The normal developing child is a very, very wide range. The expectations are different for each kid, but there are some specific things that will help them in terms of their kindergarten experience. Developmental differences are observed at every age level, in every elementary school, around the world, and some children are verbally adept, some children are more rhetorically gifted, and some children are just pleasingly average. Speech and language developmental milestones can be a red flag to possible learning issues in some children, but not necessarily. That's very important that you know that some kids will appear to be not speaking on time, and then all of a sudden everything kicks in. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have problems academically. Truly, your pediatricians hopefully have communicated well to you and your children, or have talked to your children and would refer you if there are any concerns. And if you have any questions on these guidelines, we hope that you can take it back to your pediatrician as well too, and ask them questions as the children come in. And I'm going to give the microphone over to Jerry Ann for just a moment.
Hi. A lot of parents are always nervous. You know, my child's not talking enough. I don't know if they're ready. And just to let you know, at the preschool right now, we have a variety of children that are using various means of communication. Some are highly verbal. Some have a few misarticulations and aren't understood, as well as some children that are totally nonverbal and using alternate means of communication, signing, pictures, whatever. What we're concerned with is communication. We look beyond the actual speech that a kid is using. You can be totally verbal with your facial expressions, with head nods, with, you know, any kind of gestures. Susan used the phrase, our favorite phrase, of what did you do today? Kids have a really hard time with open-ended questions, and often better frame it into like a comment. Ooh, I know you had gym today. Ooh, I see that brown paint on your shirt today. A lot of times that'll get your kid opening up versus this broad question, what did you do? I'm like, I don't know, nothing. But, you know, taking that simple thing of noticing, oh, you wore your sneakers today, I think you had gym. Those comments get your children talking a lot more than some open-ended questions. And just to know that there is such a variety of developmental appropriateness. And the beauty of kindergarten is you have those language-rich models, and the classroom teachers work in conjunction with the speech-language pathologist to build that language-rich environment as well as the print awareness environment in order to expose your child to a lot more language and opportunities.
Typically, when your children do come into kindergarten, if there are some concerns, their classroom teacher will ask me to come and listen to them and to speak to the children's feedback. And those concerns can range from articulation, which is sound production, and the red flags would be that they simply cannot understand the child and what they're saying, that they may drop letters at the beginning or end of words, and what we would call multiple articulation errors. Even if they can be understood, there may be some developmentally inappropriate sounds. And the kindergarten teachers are great at this. They know what is developmentally appropriate. They know what these kids should be doing. So usually, if there is a concern, they come to me. And often they will wait until they get to know the children well, and often until January, until things settle down as well, too, because there is a comfort level that the children have to come to, in some cases, to be able to communicate with their teacher. Fluency may be an issue with some kids, that's stuttering, but at kindergarten, we really don't want any red flags to go up, because sometimes that's a very normal developmental issue with kids as well, too. Sometimes they'll repeat themselves, brain a little faster than their mouths can. Language is sentence structure errors, vocabulary, perhaps word-finding difficulties. The children are constantly interjecting, you know what I'm talking about. Social interactions could be of concern, where the children don't reciprocate in conversation. And then phonological and phonemic awareness issues. Children can't rhyme, or they can't hear beginning sounds and ending sounds, but our language arts specialist will speak a little bit further on that as well, too. There are things that you can help your children to develop these skills. And using your checklist that you're going to get in your packet, you can go through that checklist. And if there are some red flags, talk to your pediatrician about it as well, too. Just pick those things out. Good speech and language skills are often the result of good modeling by parents. If your children uses a sound incorrectly, have them try to say the sound correctly. Don't beat it into them, but model it well and try to get them to say it, and if they can't, just move on. If they use words incorrectly, such as "I buyed the toy," say "you mean you bought the toy." And just modeling makes a huge difference and can prevent some concerns or some issues with them later on as well, too. So that is one thing that I think parents don't realize, that they really can have a significant input into their children just by modeling good speech and language skills. The one thing that I wanted to bring up in your checklist, there is one thing that I didn't clarify in the 4 and 5 years old kids, and that's using complex questions. Really, the children are going to ask you, "Mommy, what does that mean?" That's what a complex question would be. And then you want them to understand complex questions. But for instance, you could ask them, "How are a car and a truck the same? How are they different?" Those are what they mean by complex sentences. But you feel free to ask any questions afterwards. Okay?
Yeah. And just one last thing about speech and speech clarity. A lot of kids can talk very clear from like 18 months, 2 years on. But when we look at the speech hierarchy of how sounds develop, most sounds are not usually developed appropriately until age 8. So you're going to see a lot of misarticulations at this age. And, you know, it's very concerning to you because my younger child is doing it. Why isn't my older child? But you'll see that. And you'll see the kindergarten teachers giving you strategies. As Nancy so greatly emphasize, it's just real important that they're hearing the correct model after they misarticulate. So they're ending with the correct production so that they can learn it over time.
And next we have Marlene Cavanullo with the special needs.
Hello, everybody. Before I talk to you as the administrator of the Early Childhood Center program, I'm just going to tell one parent. My son, who is 27 years old, cried probably for the first 20 days of preschool and then proceeded to go to kindergarten and cried for another couple of weeks. And this was, he was going to the kindergarten down the hallway from the fifth grade classroom where my husband taught. So needless to say, my son Jared really did take his mother and father down a peg or two, given that his father was a regular education teacher, his mother had been a regular education teacher, as well as a school psychologist. So I will just emphasize to you that I hardly have all the answers. But let me step into my role that I currently serve in the community of Fairfield as the coordinator of the Early Childhood Center. The Early Childhood Center is housed at Fairfield Ward High School, and it is a program for students who are preschool age, 3 and 4 years old, who have been identified as having disabilities. Typically, in our program, have a disability that we try to keep in very general terms, and we often say that they are, you know, in need of special education services because of developmental delay. So we try not to pigeonhole them into any one category until they're a little bit older and, you know, until we absolutely have to in order to meet state and federal mandates. What I do want to tell you is our students come to us primarily in two ways. There are a number of youngsters who are identified very early in their lives, between the, you know, birth and close to 3 years old, as having developmental delays. And in their wisdom, the federal government has programs in place for these youngsters, which we typically call birth to three, meaning that any parent or caregiver who has a youngster developing from the age, you know, from birth on, who has a question about whether their child is developing or does the child have a disability, can get their child evaluated through the birth to three system. And at that point, child may be eligible, may not be. If the child's eligible, the child receives services that are very tailored and individualized to that child's needs. As those youngsters approach three, the birth to three agency refers them to Fairfield Public Schools. And this, by the way, happens in every community across the United States. And when they're referred, we sit down team to team, talk about the youngster. Parental input is, you know, input is extremely vital to us in terms of what's going on with this youngster. And we talk about what we need to do as Fairfield Public School team to look at, does that child have a disability that would continue him or her as needing services once they turn three? Again, in their wisdom, state and federal government changed things. Actually, when I started my career, there was no such thing as preschool special education. And now there is. So, you know, that just gives you a sense that I watched this evolve in my career. But if the child is eligible, we must intervene with that child at age three. So if we say, yes, your child does have a delay, needs specialized services, we don't say, but, you know, it's May, so we'll see you in September. No, child enters as soon as they're three. That is what the premise of preschool special education is in terms of starting to intervene with a child as early as possible. Our education center, Early Childhood Education Center, has a variety of services, again, tailored to individual children's needs. Some of our kids come a couple times a week for speech language therapy. Other kids are there for a preschool classroom setup. So it all really depends on that child's individual needs. Not every child comes to us from that early intervention birth to three system, having already been looked at by professionals and, you know, brought to their attention by concerned parents or caregivers. There are children whose parents begin to suspect a problem at a point where the child's past three. And in doing that, what our system has in place is parents can call. Your child is welcome to come into what we call an early childhood assessment team screening. That is a screening. The purpose of the screening is to just put a child through some basic tasks that are within a developmentally appropriate range. We look at three domains: language, which of course is critical, motor, and concept formation. And if that child looks as if, well, okay, you know, there's enough here, enough of a concern here on his or her performance to warrant further evaluation, we'll do further evaluation and then, you know, talk to the family about, here's our results, rise to the level of a disability and your child needs individualized an individualized program for specialized instruction, or not necessarily, but we can act as a resource for you in terms of pointing you in some directions, how to get some ideas about how to foster development in your child, even if your child doesn't meet criteria for having a disability. So our role in terms of tonight, as far as kindergarten is concerned, is when the children at the Early Childhood Center are of age to transition to any one of the elementary schools, the 11 elementary schools in town, we also sit with the teams who are going to receive them and, you know, work everybody through, this is what we know about the youngster, given the last year or two that we've had with him or her, current needs, we think, recommendations for services, and we work very closely with elementary schools to pass that child on to the next level, namely, the kindergarten. Some questions, that parents will often ask us when they're sitting there at the, at the very tender age of three is, well, what if my child continues to need services once they get to a kindergarten age? Because they walk into our early childhood center, and if you've never been there, it, looks not terribly different from a preschool. Our classrooms are set up like preschool classrooms. Our teachers and speech therapists and personnel do a lot of work through the play. But they'll say, well, I understand this is where he comes in this one center-based program until he's ready to go to kindergarten by age. But what about if he still needs services past kindergarten? And, of course, every one of our 11 elementary school buildings has wonderful teams in them that are comprised of special education teachers, speech-language pathologists, therapists, including regular education teachers who are obviously experts on young children. So, I will just close by saying I think the people who have spoken before me have tried to convey to you that typical development, particularly in young children, can be very, very broad. What's age expected or age appropriate is a very broad continuum. So there are many times where parents are, very concerned about a youngster and we're sitting and going over what we've observed and what we've assessed and we're saying, there are some issues here, but it's not at the level of a disability. Here's some suggestions or some strategies we can talk about with you. So that's what we try to help parents focus on, that not every child is the same, not to stereotype, but we do get, so many parents coming in and saying, I have a son and a daughter, and by this age, my daughter was saying this, 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 and this, and my son's not. And, we sit there and say, because again, every child, and we do see a lot of those different patterns in early development. So I just want to close by saying our role really, truly, is to help families figure out whether what their concerns, what concerns that they're bringing to us about their children, really, number one, does it qualify that child as having a disability that needs intervention, and or, what can we all do to foster that youngster's development on through? Okay? Thanks.
Next, we have Franklin McLean.
Here, do you want this or do you want it in here? Want it in there? Like that?
We'll try it back like up. That.
Okay. Well, I'll probably have to hold it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we have the reading readiness.
Oh, yes. Do you want me to push it forward or do you
That would be wonderful.
Okay.
Well, I guess the theme tonight is a wide range. And that truly reflects in the relationship of reading readiness. So students do come to kindergarten with a wide range of experiences relating to reading readiness. We have most children who do come with familiarity with books and being able to maneuver books in some way. Some children will know one-to-one correspondence, and if you're not an educator, that means they understand that there are groups of letters that represent a word, and then there are spaces between those words. And so they actually have now a beginning sense, an emergent level of reading. Some children will learn, will know a few familiar words, and we do have a very few number of students who do come to kindergarten who can read. Yep. By the end, students are at an emergent or early reading level. And as was referred before by our two kindergarten teachers, one of the early pieces to be ready for reading is concepts about print. So knowing that the print has meaning. So you read a book because you can read a story or you can find out information. Actually holding the book. You know, if you ever noticed a one-year-old or a two-year-old, they may be holding a book, but it's upside down. So that's just, you know, the development that moves along until students actually realize how to hold a book, what how to hold it upright, how to turn the pages in a book, directionality, going from left to right, and where do you start in a book? What's the cover? What's the back of the book? And where do you start to read on a page? Starting on the left side of the book and then going to the right. Now I'm going to get a little bit serious. Piece here, not too serious, but recent longitudinal studies of reading acquisition have demonstrated that the acquisition of phonemic awareness, which was mentioned by our language speech pathologist, is highly predictive of success in learning to read, especially when it's related to decoding, and that's being able to read the words, sounding out the letters and for the words. And where do we start? We always start with oral language, and that's what you've done with your children since you started to teach them how to speak. So now, if you're an educator here tonight, you probably will know some of these terms, but if you're a parent without the educational background, I'll just explain to you what some of these mean. But the difference between phonemic awareness, phonological awareness, and what you probably know about phonics. The first two are related to sound. They're not related to print. And phonemic awareness is understanding the smallest units of sound. Most likely they are one letter. So if a student has phonemic awareness, they are most likely are able to tell the teacher the three sounds they hear. If the teacher says, what sounds do you hear in bat? Or how many sounds do you hear? And that's often assessed by using tiles where the student moves along a number of tiles to demonstrate how many sounds they heard in that word. Phonological awareness is now larger units of study, such as syllables and onset and rhyme. It's not spelled incorrectly. Onset is the beginning sound of the word. Rhyme is the ending pattern of the word. Phonics now moves on, and that's the relationship between specific printed letters and the specific spoken. Being able to identify and seeing the letter B and saying the B sound. So promoting phonemic and phonological awareness, this is done in the classroom, but some of these things are what parents can be doing at home. Don't estimate nursery rhymes. This is where they can have so much fun and play with sound. Songs, poems, and read aloud books that you mentioned before that manipulate sounds with repetition and predictable patterns. And you'll notice that if you read those same books over and over again, the students, your children, will be able to actually read along with you or at least give you that last word that of the page. Promoting early phonics. Again, knowing that letters are different from each other and have different names. Knowing that letters are different. Now, in school, it'll be in a more formal way. At home, the alphabet song, using alphabet books. Even promoting Sesame Street. Environmental symbols, knowing on the stop sign, knowing McDonald's, you'll notice that a lot of children will pick that up automatically by osmosis. Another way to help with reading readiness is promoting the development of vocabulary, identifying items in concepts or category books. And children love that. I know my son had this book. It was so boring. I was sort of a snob when it came to children's literature, and I thought I had to read, you know, the most wonderfully written stories. But he loved this book about trucks. So I'll move on for that. books to tell events and stories, connecting words, terms from a book in your real-life situations when you're out and about, and reading wordless books. And if I can just say, I did a little research on this, because you might not realize how wordless books can promote vocabulary, but wordless books are excellent tools for helping children develop the basic building blocks of language. They stimulate creativity and language, while at the same time introducing children to basic story structures. And they help children develop eye coordination. And here are just some recommendations. They might seem rather trite and obvious, and they may be confirming to you, oh, I already do this. Well, keep it up. But the research has said that the amount of reading that students do directly correlates to academic success all the way through high school. Share your enjoyment, model by being a reader yourself, establish a reading routine, promoting the shopping of books at the library like they will be doing in school, setting up a library card for your child, and while you're reading together, have your child help by holding the book and by turning the pages. Practice picture walks. We call that in kindergarten and first and second grade even, we make predictions, and students will read through the book just using the illustrations to get a grasp of the story structure and make predictions. And reread favorites often, because the more familiar they are with the story, sometimes they will grasp some of the words that are actually on the page that way as well. And for resources, I have found two places in the Fairfield Public Library. I was able to get them two different ways, so that's why I put them in the format that I did. But down below tonight, you will have a handout of wordless books that we actually have here in the Fairfield Libraries. And enjoy reading with your children.
Well, all I can say is this team has worked out this exactly. We are like at 8 o'clock. We're perfect timing. Great group. They really are watching the clock, because we know you all are have very, you know, very tight schedules yourself. We're going to take some questions in a minute, but I think the best thing to do right now for us is, I could not have a better introduction than Franklin when she was telling us a little bit about reading with your children, because obviously that's what we do as librarians. You know, we're just delighted every time we see children come off the elevator or come up the stairs and they go, wow, we're here. And that is attributed to you parents, because you're the ones who are getting them here, and we really, really appreciate it. Just to kind of summarize some of the things that have been said that you really can be doing to help your child read. Be sure you converse with them when you are reading those books. Don't just read the words. And if you're watching us do story hours, a lot of times we're doing it to groups. So don't copy necessarily what we do. When you're reading one-on-one with your child, it's a wonderful opportunity to make it a conversation and ask them to predict, you know, what's going to happen next in the book, or how do you think that particular character is feeling. And that way you're establishing a conversation and you're getting your child ready to think about the book, and you're getting the child ready for comprehension. Be sure you start with picture books, things that are familiar objects and experiences. Mother Goose, nursery rhymes, as Franklin mentioned, are great ways to do that. And you can select some of our concept books, those alphabet books, the books about colors. Those are things that are readily recognizable by these. And our whole library itself is set out like that. We recognize that when children come into our library, about 60% of the people who come into our library upstairs here are short, and they don't know how to read. And so we have a lot of our signage is, the easy readers are over in the yellow building. The picture books are in the yellow building. The easy readers are in the blue building. And in the behind the white building is where we have a lot of our videos and DVDs. And that way we can direct a young child. We don't have to have them reading our signage. So, anyway, be sure you read books, as I think the kindergarten teachers mentioned, that tap their emotions and ask again how they feel, how they think these characters are feeling. And then they'll actually start to talk to you a little bit, too, about their day. And make sure you read funny books, books that you like. That's important, because if you don't like them, they probably won't get read. But go ahead and reread and reread those ones that are your child's favorite. And be sure to get a library card for your children. Right now, and we are here to help you do that. Have children out there do not have library cards. A child is never too young to get a library card at the Fairfield Public Library. We have children that are under a year that have gotten library cards. So please get a library card. I'd like to introduce right now, again, I think they were busy before kind of doing a little helping getting out of the chairs, but I want to introduce some of our children's librarians, and they're going to tell you a little bit about some of the books that we have. And in the folders that you all are going to be receiving, which look just like this, if you open them up, you're going to see some very colorful book lists. And these are all different types of lists that the librarians are going to be showing you. And they're going to be there in stations. And feel free to check out some books tonight if you'd like. If you don't have a library card yourself, you're welcome to get one as well. First of all, Cheryl Delvecchio, who's there in the back, is going to be talking about the... she's got the easy readers back there. And she will be over in what we call the blue building. So you're welcome to go back there. And Cindy Haynes, next green folder there. And Cindy is going to be in the parent-teacher room. And that's oftentimes an area that a lot of you are not aware of that we have here in the library. We have books on, potty training, on pregnancy. And these are all up there just for parents. A lot of developmental, what every first grader should know, what every second grader should know. You name it, if it's a child care or a parenting issue or even a teaching issue, we have it up here. We often have duplicate copies downstairs in a parenting section as well. Meg Lurchin is over there with the orange list. And Meg is going to have a lot of picture books out this evening. And the books that these librarians have chosen are very specific to kindergartners and getting ready for school and very appropriate not only interest-wise for these children, but also developmentally for them. These are books that they will be able to understand as you read to them. And Diane Pagnosi and Beth Sahagin are going to be talking about nonfiction. And, of course, nonfiction is oftentimes overlooked because you oftentimes think, well, the child wants to read a story. But there are a lot of children out there who want to read about things that actually exist, like the trucks and whatever. And those are very important books. And you really have to – that's how they discover their world. That's how they can find out about places that they can't visit personally. And I did hear a nice plug earlier about our museum passes. If there are any of you that don't realize it, with your Fairfield Public Library card will enable you to take out either free or reduced price tickets actually to get you into area museums. We have about 12 different museums, and there's the Beardsley Zoo, there's the Mystic Aquarium, there's Maritime Center, Stepping Stones, there's the Mashantucket Pequot. So all of those are available for you to take out with your library card. So that's another good value of that library card. Okay, while the librarians are getting ready to get everything set for you as we go in there, I think it's probably time to open up for questions. Gary, do you want to kind of field the questions? And we're going to do this for about 10 minutes, and then we're going to go into the other room. And before we do, I do want to say one thing before we start the questions. If you are a teacher, you will have to tell them at the desk, and they will give you your certificate of completion. And unfortunately, we do not have enough folders only for those of you who are registered, and they will be checking your names off as you take the list. Because if you are not registered and you don't get a folder, give them your name, and we will try to make up more. But at the present time, we really only have enough for those who are registered for the program. Okay.
Once again, I'd like to just take a moment to thank you all for coming out tonight. And I wish you would just join me in thanking our panelists for doing such a great job tonight. As well as thanking Barbara for hosting us. Thank you. Thank you, Barbara. We are more than happy to take some questions from you related to some of the information. As I mentioned, shortly you're going to be going out into the library for some information out there, but some of us will be hanging back in here if you'd like to come individually to talk to us. But are there any questions? And I'll repeat it so that everyone can hear it. Yes, ma'am. Access to computers, yes. Yes, yes. Every one of the elementary schools has a computer lab, as well as computers within the kindergarten classroom. So all of the grades go through the computer lab and have access right in the classroom as well. Yes, ma'am. That's a great question. The question was about being chronologically ready. By state law and by Fairfield policy, for example, in this coming school year, you would need to be 5 by January 1st of 2009. And as an elementary school principal, I can tell you that often in kindergarten classes, there is a wide range of ages and then, of course, developmental readiness within the one classroom, because there are some parents who have decided to hold back from the previous year. So we might have children who were August, September, October from the previous year, and then those who are coming in right up through December and right up through January 1st. However, what I would say to you is, it's, as I said in my earlier remarks, they are eligible to come to kindergarten if they are within that time frame, 5 before January 1st. But the readiness issue is very much a personal family decision that you can make with your pediatrician if you have concerns, or your preschool teacher, or even coming to the school and going through the registration and visitation process and asking questions there. For the most part, most people, it's not an issue. Most people know, yep, my child is definitely ready. They're, you know, well range. But there are some parents who have some concerns or questions about that, and that does require some individual attention, if you will, or some conversation. And certainly we are... Our school staffs are well-versed in that. And the kindergarten teachers are also used to having a wide range of kids within the classroom. And as we know, 1 year in the life of a 5-year-old or a 4-year-old, 1 year is a huge amount of time in terms of the development. So there is a wide range, but our staff is trained to deal with that. It's not the same when you're going from 49 to 50. The jump is not nearly as drastic as from 5 to 6. I found that out a few years ago. Yes, you had a question? For the preschool? Special ed question.
Well, the answer, as it should, is it depends. That is the correct answer. It would depend upon the individual needs of the child, and I can honestly say to you, in response to that, all of the above. So that is why it's so critical. Starting in early February, we have started, you know, Nancy is elementary SLP, and Jerianne is preschool SLP. Our teams, such as, you know, Nancy's at Mill Hill and all of the other 11 elementary schools, and our team at ECC, have already, by mid-February, had a number of conversations, you know, back and forth in terms of who this child is that's coming to you in to kindergarten in September, and their needs look like, what have they been receiving, and what do their needs look like going forward. So all of the above. You know, we can have children getting pulled out into special education resource rooms and or speech and language pathologists therapy rooms. We can have therapists going in and doing work within the regular education classroom. It really very much is driven by the youngsters' individualized goals and objectives and by an awful lot of collaboration between sending and receiving teams. You're welcome.
You had a question? Send them on to us. No, yeah, no. It's not about whether they should know that. It's great if they do. They do not have to know that. Yes. No. The question was, should children be writing when they come into kindergarten, such as writing their name?
I think it's great if they can write their name, but we definitely have children that come in who don't, and we work with them, and they do learn how to write their name, but yeah, that was the question.
And also, some children know uppercase and lowercase letters. Some can identify them. Some don't know any. And that's one part of our job, is helping them learn that as we go along through the year, too. So, wherever they are, we take them to the next step.
Yes. There are materials that could be recommended, and I'm sure that everyone around the table could give you that information. I think in the packet you will find some great resources. But I would really, really recommend ages 3 and 4, lots of play, lots of oral development, lots of drawing and painting and finger work, finger exercises and gross and fine motor, cutting, pasting, those kinds of things, not necessarily workbook activities, but, certainly, that's something that you can do, but I think the foundation is going to be much stronger if they have lots of opportunities to play. But there are great resources, and in the packet you'll find some of those. Yes. No, the question was, what are the scheduling options at the kindergarten level in Fairfield? And we have full day schedules, we have extended day schedules, et cetera. The curriculum that we have in kindergarten and all the way through all of the grades is consistent throughout the schools. And the kindergarten schedule, the curriculum is the same for both of those schedules. These wonderful teachers do a terrific job ensuring that that curriculum is met in either of those schedules, and it's really a matter of not that many hours, quite frankly, between the two schedules. The difference in hours is about 4 hours per week of school time, so it's not a drastic amount of time, but obviously the full day program does offer a few more hours of instruction, but the same curriculum is delivered in both settings. Yep. We'll go over here and then we'll come back. Right. Yeah. I think three of our last four presidents were left-handed, I think. And I think Barack Obama's left-handed as well, so.
No, the good news is they're at tables. So they don't have to worry about putting their arm on it. Some issues, should I focus more on it?
No.
Does it matter if she's right? Sometimes she does right, but mostly left.
Basically, what we do recommend is that when you're presenting materials to a child, you present it to the center. That allows the child to grab it with the right or grab it with the left. We never redirect. Sometimes they will explore their right hand, they'll explore their left, and you start to see an over-reliance on one side. But we always present materials to the middle and allow them to choose a side. There is no right, there is no wrong.
And just because your child will maybe write with their left hand doesn't necessarily mean they'll left hand. I'm one of those. I learned how to write with my left hand, and I always got frustrated that the art teacher used to stick the scissors in my left hand, but I cut with my right hand. So that's also a possibility, too.
We have learned a lot about child development in the last number of years. yes, you had a question. Not a one. And no, I'm not going there. The question was extended day versus full day schedules. Are there any guidelines around that? And no, again, that's a very personal decision. When you get to the school that your child will be going to, there's an extensive registration, orientation, and visitation process. You will hear extensively about the program in kindergarten and in the different schedules. You will have a preference. You will be asked to give your preference for which of those two schedules you would like to have, and we honor that. So no, there's really not that much. And again, it's about 4 minutes difference between the two. Yes, back here. No, you.
When do you go about registration?
The question was, when do we do registration? For incoming kindergarten this year, that will be coming up in the month of March. In the packet that you'll be getting tonight as you leave, there is a full schedule for every school in Fairfield. Registration, visitation, and orientation dates. And they begin around March and go through April and May for those three events. Yes, ma'am?
I know that reading is important to your child. I know modeling and language is important to your child. But what if you're reading a book with not bad language, like swear words in it, but it's grammatically wrong? Do you correct it? Do you just let it go?
You know, there's some really fun books out there that do not make any sense in terms of grammar, or even they have nonsense words in them that aren't real words. I would play with the language, and you laugh at the mistake and let them know that something silly is happening. They are not going to necessarily pick up on it, but you're beginning to model it that way. But no, I would not worry about that. If it's a good story and good literature with great illustrations, go for it. Then I probably should keep it out of your house. I know there was a few other questions over here. Yes. That is the magic. That's the magic of a kindergarten classroom, quite frankly. And you will have many opportunities once the children are in school to come in school, to be there, to see what's going on. The other presentation by the kindergarten teachers of what a day looks like, and they are tailoring those. They are really differentiating what they need to do for the groups of kids within the classroom. But kids are amazingly adaptable as well, and they pick up very quickly what the routines are, and that gap often closes quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one way. We definitely do that. We do some individual work. I know in the classrooms, there are often many parent volunteers that are helping out as well. But besides that, the teachers are working child to child or in small groups, moving around the tables where the children are sitting. So there's often large group instruction that everyone's participating in. Then they go off to do their independent practice, and that's where the teacher will take that child who maybe needs a little extra time and work with them individually, whereas the others are getting some enrichment that they're moving along. But yeah, I mean, it is a challenge, and it's a fun challenge, but it certainly is one that we face in kindergarten. Yes. Oh, we're not going to, the question was about No Child Left Behind, and are we looking forward to getting rid of it? And again, that's not an area that I'm necessarily going to go to. I think actually it has had some positive aspects on what we do. It really has helped us look at kids differently, looked at all kids individually. And because of the way that we have to look at some of our assessments, it's caused us to really drill down for why certain kids are not making a certain standard. That is very important. So I do think there's been a positive effect. Yes, certainly I think that the emphasis on standardized testing is not something that I think is a good thing. I think we do too much of that already. Is this being podcasted? So I think the emphasis on standardized testing is something we need to take a look at, because I think these experts, the principals, et cetera, we do so much ongoing assessment. We do have a really good handle on where kids are. But standardized assessments are important, but I do think the overemphasis of them, especially to judge a success of a school or a program, is perhaps skewed a little out of whack from where it needs to be. So, yes, ma'am. The question was how much or what kind of homework is typical for kindergarten?
I think it varies really from school to school, but usually whatever we're doing in the classroom, like if we're working on a particular concept in math, like sorting, we might write in our newsletter, this is what we're doing in math, some people call them in a fun, playful way. I would say that it's not homework like sit down, paper, pencil homework. It's more fun reinforcing things that we're doing in the classroom. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and most of us do have newsletters that we send home regularly, so you know what's happening, you know what to expect. When we celebrate 100 days of school, we ask children to bring in a project that they did at home with 100 things on it. And that was a fun way to carry over what we were doing in math, too. So it always ties in what we're doing.
Homework is really an important part of the school program. We certainly encourage homework throughout the grades, including in kindergarten. We want it to be developmentally appropriate, and there are guidelines, time guidelines, that the Board of Education has put in, and you'll see that in the family guides that come home. There are certain number of minutes that we recommend, and it's a guideline. But as the children progress through the grades, obviously the homework becomes more academic. But we really do think that it's important for them to relearning that occurred earlier in the day to practice it and solidify those skills through independently. We're going to wrap it up here. So a couple more questions. Yes. The curriculum. The question was, how much does the curriculum vary from town to town, state to state? This is Connecticut. We believe very much in local control of our schools, unlike other parts of the country that have county systems or even statewide systems. So for years, 200 years, 300 years, we have a long tradition in Connecticut of deciding within each town, deciding what their curriculum is going to be. Only really within the last, say, 15 to 20 years, have we become more aware of more of a statewide focus. We have Connecticut Mastery Test. We have the capped test at the high school. So in fact, since those are our statewide standardized assessments, we all need to be sure that we're doing well on those. And so therefore, that has kind of forced us to take a look at our curriculum across the state. But Connecticut does not have a statewide curriculum as of this point, although our new commissioner is, I think, thinking along those lines to a degree. I think they're wanting to raise standards for all districts. Fairfield has a very competitive and aggressive curriculum, but it probably varies from, say, Westport or from Trumbull, but at the same time, it's very much like those curriculum in other ways. So I think, you'd find some similarities. We all have the same basic mission of what we're trying to accomplish in our elementary schools, but how we go about doing that might vary slightly. But we have a strong tradition in this state of local control of our curriculum and of our resources, et cetera. But Fairfield is really a leader in many, many ways, and I am very proud of the schools. I think you will be too, once you have children in the schools. So, there was a question over here. Yes.